Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. It's time. Get your mind right, people. We're about to take you on a journey into the Empowerment Network. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, coming to you live for another segment of NAABA Community Conversations. It's part three. Thank you. Thank you. And welcome. Welcome. Thank you for joining us today. We have another live conversation with Brother George. We're going to be talking about part three of what slavery did to us, 1864 to 1900. But first, we'll start with the NAAEA, and that is the National African American Empowerment Association. That association has been designed to motivate, educate, and inspire the African American community by developing programs and services that educate, inspire, motivate, and empower our community to become the best people that we can be. It's mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual. We got to do the work of working on ourselves, people. So let's get started with the interview today. But first, I want you to think about one thing before we get started. This history is very important. And we have to understand our history in order to understand where we came from and where we need to go. With the NAAEA, we have a peace concept that we're implementing, which is in five areas: the understanding and the education in the areas of politics, economics, athletics, which encompasses health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, as in cultural programs, and then a comprehensive education. Right? We want our people to be educated, and when you're educated, you can make good decisions. So today we're going to talk about our history, so that will fall under culture and education, and we got Brother George with us today, and we'll welcome into the show now, Brother George. Brother George, how are you?
Well, I'm doing fine, Marvin, and once again, you know, thank you for the invitation, and I hope we can get a few things accomplished today.
Okay, great. We're talking about 1864 to 1900 and what went on. And our conversation is about what slavery did to us, right? And so as we moved out of our enslavement and into the Reconstruction era, tell us a little bit about the Freedmen's Bureau and then the 13th Amendment and the 14th Amendment and the 15th Amendment. I know that's a lot, but give me what you got and I'll come back in.
What I would like to do before I do that is kind of give a recap of where we left off at with the emancipation. Now, there were three phases to the emancipation. The first phase happened in April of 1862 when Lincoln freed all of the slaves in Washington, D.C., which was about 3,000. And that was in 1862. The official emancipation date was January 1st, 1863. Now, the Juneteenth date was in 1865, and I believe it was the summer of 1865, and that happened in Texas. Now, upon emancipation, there were some things that led up to Reconstruction. Before the official Reconstruction and the Freedmen's Bureau was started, as I said previously, our people were really desperados. We were looking for family. We was poor. We was, you know, thrown into sharecropping because it was like, where are we going to go? Okay, we free, but where are we going to go? And so ultimately, that led to 1865, where you had the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment, and I would like to, the 13th Amendment is the amendment that abolished slavery. And the 13th Amendment reads, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States and any place subject to their jurisdiction. So,
okay, so can you tell us how this 13th Amendment was applied to our people?
Yes, sir. The 13th Amendment, basically, it still gave them a way to use us as slaves. And that was to jail you, to put you back in jail. And so what they did was they came up with different laws and ways to lock us up for penny ante crimes, and they would put us in jail and they would have us working for the same people that we once worked for on the plantation. And these kinds of things went on from 1863 until 1865 when the 13th Amendment was enacted. But what I'm saying to you is this, is that even after the 13th Amendment was enacted and the 14th Amendment was enacted, they still in the South were determined to keep you in a state of bondage and to whatever extent that they possibly could. Now, the 14th Amendment gave you citizenship because the 13th Amendment didn't make you a citizen. It just made you free. And so that's going to be significant further down the road to understand the difference when you're given citizenship and when you're given emancipation, because emancipation might have been better because it gave you sovereignty, where you were your own entity, okay? But citizenship attaches you to something. And so they gave us, in the 14th Amendment, you were given citizenship and you were given protection, equal protection under the law for all citizens. And so, and while we're, you know, on the amendments, the 15th Amendment gave black men the right to vote. It didn't give it to black women. It gave black men the right to vote. And ultimately, down the road, you'll find out that these kind of things was like traded off, just like dominoes.
Okay, great. So basically, we went from the plantation to prison and back to the plantation. Wow. Okay, so next is the... Tell us a little bit about the Freedmen's Bureau and then a little bit about the benefits of that in terms of education, HBCUs, and then prominent black representatives of that time.
Well, you said a lot, Marvin. So I guess I'll start at the beginning. Basically, Reconstruction involved let's start with the Reconstruction, the actual Reconstruction Act, which was called Radical Reconstruction. The actual Reconstruction Act was in 1867. And Radical Reconstruction was defined as reintegrating, you know, the African American back into the Southern society, because that's where we were having most of our issues, because that's where we were slaves. And so up north, I'm not going to say that Northerners love black people like as though there were no racists up north. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that the ones that still wanted you to be their property were in the South. And so those were the ones that we had to deal with on a daily basis. And so that is what Reconstruction was supposed to mean. It was mean reconstruct the society and merge in the ex-slave with their ex-masters and their children and their society so that we could receive the benefits of being a part of the society. Now, in order to do that, they created what you call the Freedmen's Bureau. Now, the Freedmen's Bureau down the road eventually was always under attack because it was giving us benefits. Now, the Freedmen's Bureau set up employment opportunity, training, and one of the real highlights of the Freedmen's Bureau was that it established some prominent HBCUs that you might be familiar with. And the first one was set up in Washington, D.C., and it was named after a Union general named Oliver Howard. And you know that to be Howard University. And Oliver Howard served as the president of Hampton from 1869 until 1874. Now, other of these colleges that were established around that same time was Fisk University, Tennessee State, and they have Hampton University, but I know Hampton was called Institute at that time. And some of those places may have been called colleges during that time, but, you know, for argument's sake, we're going to call them what their name is today, which is Fisk University, Tennessee State, and Hampton University. Now, in 1872, the Freedmen's Bureau was dismantled the summer of 1872.
Great. So I would like to add that a young college recruit chose Howard over UCLA in Kentucky. So that made me feel really good. McCurr Maker is his name. So check him out. He's going to be playing HBCU ball for our HBCUs. And also what we want to do with the NAAEA is to connect with HBCUs so they can have a prominent role in the community in terms of building and getting our young, educated people out into the community. If you're a marketing major, if you're an economics major, we need you to come into the community and help us with economic development. So let's can we talk about the political advancements of that era and some of our prominent black politicians or representatives that were elected officials in that day?
Yes, sir. The Black Reconstruction also opened up because of the Voting Rights Act that gave the African-American male the ability to elect officials or to vote to elect officials. There were many black legislators during Black Reconstruction or Reconstruction. And that brings to mind one brother in particular. This brother was, on May 13th in 1862, his brother's name was Robert Smalls, and he worked on one of the Confederate steamers. A steamer is really a warship, and it was docked in Charleston Harbor in South Carolina. And so he was, you know, his job there, but he was still a slave. And so he decided that after he saw the crew leave the ship that night, because they would leave the ship and go back to the barracks, and that's where they would sleep. They wouldn't sleep on the ship. And so the ship was basically left unguarded. And so he decided that this was the perfect time for him to gather up his family and use that ship as a means of escape, you know, to freedom. And so he got his family together, and he made sure everything was cool. And what he did was, as a disguise, he put on the captain of the ship's straw hat and this long coat that he used to wear. And so what he did was he piloted the ship. He started the ship up and cruised it on down and eased past Fort Sumter. And right past Fort Sumter, there was a Union barricade, and that's where freedom was. And so he got to freedom and his family, and he eventually acquired a position with the military as on a naval vessel. I'm not going to say that they had a navy back then because I'm not sure that they called it that. But I know he was in the Union military during the Civil War, and he served on a Union naval vessel. And after he came out of the service, he returned home to Beaufort, South Carolina. And when he returned home, he was elected to the state House of Representatives, the United States House of Representatives. And his name was Robert Smalls. Now, there are others, and one of the first was Hiram Rhodes Rebels. Now, Hiram served as a chaplain in the Union Army for the black regiments during the Civil War. And on February the 25th, he was sworn in as the U.S. Senator of Mississippi, and he was the first. The highlight of the Reconstruction period's elected officials was in 1874. And what they, you know, that when you have a bill that you're trying to pass that's controversial, you'll have people debating from one side and the other to get that bill passed. And so the bill that they were debating was, once again, it was another civil rights law. And this civil rights law was to outlaw discrimination on the basis of race in hotels, theaters, and rail cars. Now, this debate was between a white gentleman that was from Georgia congressman named Alexander Stevens, and Congressman Robert Brown Elliott, who was African American. Now, Stevens argued that, his statement, I would rather read his statement, what he said. He said to Congressman Stevens, "The progress of events has swept away that pseudo-government which rested on greed, pride, and tyranny. And the race whom he then ruthlessly spurned and trampled on are here to meet him in debate," Elliot said. Now, Elliot gained national notoriety for that debate because he actually won it, and they passed that civil rights law. And one Kentucky newspaper said that Elliott had gave the greatest speech in American history by a black man. Now, you know that's saying something because he's doing the same time period as Frederick Douglass, and Frederick Douglass gave some great speeches. But now that's one person's opinion. So he had to have given a magnificent representation of himself.
Wow, great information, brother. Great information. That's powerful. So with all of that going on, and so we're bending the curve to 1866, can you tell us a little bit about the Civil Rights Act of 1866 and what it established in the country at that time?
Now, the Civil Rights Act of 1866, that established basically civil rights for anyone who really wasn't white. And so it might have been other racial groups that were there, because that was a national civil rights thing. The one that I just talked about that came years after that, in 1874, was just dealing with the southern states. That was just dealing with the southern states, and that was dealing with rail cars, hotels, and theaters. But the 1866 Act, which goes a little further back, was like an overall, you know, national thing. And I think that it has something to do with they wanted our people to be able to, black folks, to be able to travel in any state in the Union and have their civil rights.
Wow, that's interesting, because it provided for the equality of citizens in the United States and the enjoyment of civil rights and immunities. Now, we talked about how we were still fighting for that in the 60s. This, man, that's almost 100 years later. That's very interesting. But let's move on. I just thought I'd throw that in to think about that. We had those rights in 1866, and we're looking at 1965. Before we had those enacted. Anyway, let's move on to the Act of 1871 and what that did and how that changed some things as well for African Americans and in the country in general.
Well, in 1871, an interesting thing happened. I'm kind of jumping all over the place, because I talked about 1874, and now I'm talking about 1871. Well, in 1871, an interesting thing happened in the United States. Just like France was bankrupt after their battle with Toussaint Overture, the United States was bankrupt after the Civil War. And so in the process, the United States needed to borrow money, because when you're bankrupt, you need money. And so the people that were willing to give them the money was the international banks, which one of the key figures of the international bank was the Rothschild family, which many of y'all hear about. Now, the Rothschild family and the international banks were not willing to just lend the United States money on their word. That was not going to work with an international bank. And they knew that the United States was in dire need of that money to keep its status that it was trying to build in the world. And so international banks, they don't care who they lend money to. As long as you pay them back with interest the way they want to be paid back, they don't care who you are. They'll lend money to both sides in a war. You know, it doesn't matter to them. They're just about the money. So what they did was they told the United States, they gave the United States Congress an offer. And what the offer was they wanted to convert the United States into one specific location so that they could incorporate that operation. And that way they could really maneuver it. And so that is when the United States became Washington, D.C. And when they established the United States, as its address was Washington, D.C., and they incorporated it. At that same time, and mind you, the Congress of the United States really had no constitutional right to make a deal like that. But they made it anyway, and no one stopped them, and it's probably because they needed the money so bad. So when they incorporated the United States, and the United States became the corporation of the United States, and you can Google this yourself to find out what I'm telling you the truth, that they also were able to manipulate the Constitution. And so essentially what they did was they changed a few words in the Constitution, and they did away with the old one and then shifted over to a new Constitution without a lot of people understanding that that's what they did. So now the first victims of that new Constitution was us, because the Civil Rights Act of 1874 was the one that I just spoke to you about. Now, you have to understand that what this corporation had done was they incorporated the United States itself. And so if you incorporate the United States, then that means that who are the bonds? Okay, because the corporation has stocks and has bonds. So the bonds were out to the international bank. So who was the stock? The stock was the American people. Okay, but now remember, many of the United States citizens, they didn't need to sign contracts with this new established government. But we did. We signed contracts with them to get these civil rights and to get certain things that we needed as a people, because we were very needy. And so at the time that we signed those contracts, we signed ourselves over to being something that we weren't before in this country when they citizenized us. That's why I said maybe being a sovereign, if we could have figured out a way to successfully defend the Black Wall Street and keep things going where we could have financed our own thing, that might, and we would have had to have done it way back in 1860. You know, that would have been a much better alternative, but we were in a position where we were needy. And so we signed whatever documents that they wanted us to sign so that we could get the benefits or whatever it was they were going to offer, citizenship, better treatment, whatever. And so we became the first corporations. And the way that you know that you're a corporation is that everything that comes to you comes in capital letters. When you get your electric bill, it comes in capital letters. You get your gas bill, it comes in capital letters, and that's because you're a corporation. Now, what is the significance of that? The significance of that is that when you read the original documents of the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution, when they talk about taxes, taxes were supposed to be paid by the corporations, okay? And so if you once were a sovereign citizen, you didn't have to pay taxes. And so I'll give you an example of that. All right. If you remember the Western days when they had the cowboys, and they would stand out in the middle of the street and they would have a gunfight, and one would shoot the other one dead in the middle of the street. As long as that person, you know, that it was classified as a fair fight and they agreed to fight to the death with those guns or whoever shot each other down in the street, whatever, nobody did nothing and nobody went to jail. The guy just walked off as long as it was a fair fight. He just walked off into the sunset. He didn't even have to report to nobody and tell them the story or nothing or nothing. As long as it was classified as a fair fight, you just walk away. Well, that's because those people back then were sovereigns. Okay, but once you become a corporation, you can't do stuff like that because they change the rules on you. You can't just go out there and just shoot somebody and give no explanation or nothing like that. Now, this is what I want to add to that. That comes through doing things with the U.S. government contractually. Okay, now, there were many whites in this country that never did anything contractually with the United States. Now, eventually, they came up with the birth certificate, but that was years after this. Okay, and so many of those people never did anything contractually. So when you see some of these people that go into court and you hear about this information about we're really not supposed to be the ones to pay income taxes, well, we're not. I just told you that in the Constitution, it said that the corporations were supposed to pay for the taxes. Okay, now, if they're still sovereigns and they go into the court and they can prove that they never did any contractual work with the government, then they let them walk. And they say, I'm not paying no taxes. I ain't paying the back taxes to the IRS or nothing because I don't see any tax law on the books that you can point to, and they can't. Okay, because the law was already there. They, when they rewrote things, the law was the corporations, but most people don't know you're a corporation now. You see, and so that's how they can tax you. And so in order for you to be tax exempt, you have to, you know, talk to people about tax exemption, which the Native Americans are tax exempt and Aboriginal people are tax exempt. If you know what you're doing, you know to file that. But as far as everyone else in this country, and the 13th and 14th Amendment citizens, which are us, we're not tax exempt. The Negro, I'm going to call that person the Negro because the Negro is not really an Aboriginal or a Moor. The Negro is what was made out of slavery, and they didn't give you, you know, your corporation.
Wow, that's earful. So, people, it's homework time. I want you to look up the District of Columbia Act of 1871. I want you to also understand that the federal government called the U.S. is a corporation and not a country. All right? Got to dig that. Okay, let's move on into Black Codes and Jim Crow and those laws that came into effect around 1877.
Well, in the South, a lot of black folks was still catching hell, you know, and even though there was a lot of good progress that was made during Reconstruction, but you know the whites got jealous and they doubled down on their KKK, you know, and white supremacy groups to terrorize our people, and so our people were getting to a point, you know, where we were getting back to fearfulness and you know, they started hanging us again and all these different things. And so eventually, let me take a step back to explain a person that allowed a lot of that stuff to be set into motion. That was Andrew Johnson. When President Lincoln was shot and killed, his vice president was Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson, he was very different than Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln was basically a follower of the constitutional laws, and he felt like that people should have their rights in the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. He believed in that, even though he might not have necessarily cared as much about black people as history says it. He still believed that he tried to follow the laws. Now, Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson didn't think like that.
Andrew Jackson, he pretty much gave the southern states back their governmental rights, because as soon as he came in, what he did was say, okay, you know, because the Union armies had went around, and when they were conquering the South, at the same time, they were confiscating a lot of the land, where the landowners either ran off from the Union army or they surrendered and they said, okay, well, this is our land now. This is the United States. We're confiscating this land under the United States government, and so, so, and so. And so a lot of that land, they, along with the Freedmen's Bureau, was redistributing some of that land to black folks. Okay, and so we was getting this land and so on. So when Andrew Jackson came in, he turned around and said, well, actually, the southern states never gave up their right to govern themselves. Even though they became the Confederacy, as long as they come back and they honor the 13th Amendment, you know, they got their rights back to govern themselves. And all the lands that were confiscated are given back to the owners pre-war. So everybody, so all that land that they had given to our people through the Freedmen's Bureau and the Union armies, they took it back, and they gave it back to the owners. And so Andrew Johnson was all, Jackson was also not a big proponent of the Freedmen's Bureau. As a matter of fact, he got rid of it as quickly as he could. He tried to veto any kind of bill that kept it going. And so when you look at what happened there, that was another proponent that was helping to bring back the black codes and Jim Crow. So now, by 1877, they voted they brought back the black codes in the form of Jim Crow laws. And Jim Crow laws were laws that reinforced the old Confederate laws, the laws of segregation, like the different water fountains that you drink out of, and you couldn't go into the same business establishment with whites. You had to come in the back door. They came in the front. You know, all of the different laws that dealt with black people. Now, one of the interesting things that the Black Codes also did was it re-disenfranchised us, because once they were able to put the Black Codes and, you know, the Jim Crow laws back into effect, what they would do is when they would hire us on a job, they would make us sign like a year-long contract with them. And so by signing that year-long contract, they didn't have to give you no raises. They could put all kinds of extra stipulations on you within that year-long contract. And then if you refuse to sign it or you break it, then all they would do is just figure out a way to put you in jail and make you work for nothing. Now, another thing that happened during that time period is the thing that they call the new Jim Crow, which was really just the old Jim Crow. But it describes the old Jim Crow when they talk about the new Jim Crow, which was they started locking us up for looking at a white woman or for laughing in public, you know, laughing out loud in public. Or if you were out past a certain hour, you know, they had curfews for black people, but not everybody else. And then they would give you 10 years or so in jail, like if you grabbed an apple off the table or something, stole an apple or something, they'd give you 10 years in prison, you know, for that. And so, and what they would do is the prison would rent you out to the same plantations that many of us used to work on. So the Black Codes and Jim Crow was really a severe blow, you know, to black people in the South. And so it also set off what they call the Great Migration. And you know what the Great Migration was when we started running to the major cities like Los Angeles, Philadelphia, New York, Detroit, Chicago. We started running up north, you know, to where large-scale cities that needed cheap labor. And so we ran to those cities because we were running from the South and the Black Codes and the Jim Crow laws and things of this nature. Now, the thing that I'm going to eventually move forward with is the is Plessy versus Ferguson, because Plessy versus Ferguson is what secured the Jim Crow by winning in the Supreme Court, separate but equal. And separate but equal, you know, meant that they could still use segregation as a they could still use segregation as a tool. And, you know, and what I'll do is I'll pick up there for part four.
Okay, great. One thing I would like to add is that Andrew Johnson was the Reconstruction president. As you mentioned, Jackson was on the $20 bill, and we're trying to get him to have Harriet Tubman replace him. And so that's how Andrew Jackson can get in this conversation, because we want to get our sister Harriet Tubman on that $20 bill. But Andrew Jackson was a president earlier who moved the Indians out of their place with the Indian Removal Act. But Johnson replaced Lincoln after he was assassinated, and he was so lenient on that Reconstruction that allowed the South to move forward. So that's what we have for today. Thank you, Brother George, for another wonderful, interesting conversation here on Community Conversations with Brother George, part three, What Slavery Did to Us, 1864 to 1900. Join us again for our next episode on that. I think you can learn a lot if you just listen, right, and then go back and do your research. And then if you have any questions, call in, and you know, the education process continues. Join us on Saturday at 2 p.m. for Empowerment Saturday. It's a conversation. It's an open conversation. It's a safe space where African Americans can voice their opinion, right, wrong, or indifferent. We're talking because it is us that can make a difference in our lives, in our community. Be safe, be positive, be productive, and become the best person that you could be today and every day. It's the African American Empowerment Association. Visit us on the web at www.naa.ea.weebly.com. Join, become a member, right? You can't do nothing but grow, and guess what? We have to do it, but we have to do it together. Until next time, thanking again Brother George for his information and his knowledge, giving us education 365 days of the year. I will talk to you soon. Peace.
But I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.